So during the season of Advent, the church has two focuses for us. One focus is on the first coming of Christ, which happened 2,000 years ago at Bethlehem, the first Christmas. And so part of Advent is preparing ourselves for the celebration of Christmas, to be able to celebrate worthily and well. But during Advent, we also reflect on Christ's second coming, when he will come in glory to judge the living and the dead. And so it's a special season for us to focus on what the church calls the four last things: death, judgment, heaven, and hell. So it's also a season of preparation for us to remember that we will meet the Lord as judge and to prepare our souls for him. And that might be kind of scary to think about, meeting the Lord as judge. When I was in one of my later years in the seminary, I had an eschatology professor, and eschatology is a fancy word for the four last things: death, judgment, heaven, and hell. And my eschatology professor was an Italian Jesuit named Father Nitrola, and he was a very eccentric person. He was a germaphobe, and so he would walk into our classroom, and he wouldn't even touch the desk in the front of the classroom until he had wiped it down with a disinfectant wipe. And this was over 10 years before COVID, so he was very cautious and ahead of his time. That's one thing I remember about him. And another thing I will never forget about him is that he was always cold. And so in June or in October, our classroom in Rome would be blazing hot, and he would walk in with a jacket on and kind of be shivering the whole time. One of our professors died when I was a student priest, and I ended up celebrating the funeral mass right next to Father Nitrola, and he wore an alb, a stole, and a big winter coat throughout the whole funeral. And then right before the Eucharistic prayer, he took his coat off to celebrate the mass. And as soon as he received communion, then he put his coat back on. So he's a very eccentric person, but he gave a wonderful class. And I'll never forget what Father Nitrola told us on the last day of our eschatology class. He said, "Many people fear meeting Christ as judge, but I want you to know that Jesus the judge is the same Jesus who forgives your sins in the confessional, the same Jesus whom you've encountered so many times in the Eucharist, the same Jesus whom you know and who knows you. So if you know Jesus as your friend, there's no need to fear him as your judge, because you know him and are friends with him." So do we ever think about this, that Jesus wants to be our friend? I feel like I discovered that rather late in my life. My first year in theology, which would have been just a few years before I was ordained a priest, I was on retreat with my classmates, and an older priest who was leading my classmates and I on retreat read to us this verse from John's Gospel. And I don't think I've ever been the same since. He read this from John 15. "No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I no longer call you slaves, because a slave does not know what his master is doing. I have called you friends, because I have told you everything I have heard from my Father." At that retreat, Monsignor Lyons told us that God desires our friendship. And if we think about our own longing for God, he longs for me even more than I long for him, which seems unbelievable. But it's true, Jesus says so. He wants our relationship to be mutual, which is what a friendship is. It's mutual. So these words that I heard on my first retreat in theology at the seminary changed my life forever, and they changed my prayer forever as well. So that old priest then would become my spiritual director for the next 5 years, and he taught me that prayer is merely this: quality time with the Lord. How do we come to know Jesus? How does he become our friend? How do we avoid being like the foolish virgins that we heard in the gospel passage who are knocking on the door and Jesus says those dreaded words, "I do not know you"? How do we avoid that? Jesus saying to us, "I do not know you"? Well, it's simply by entering into a personal relationship with him, a friendship. And I presume that this is why you're here this evening, so that you can come to know Jesus better. If we want to know Jesus, then we have to do the same thing that we would do when we want to know anybody better. We have to spend time together. When I was a student in the seminary, I became dear friends with an American family who was living in Italy at the time. It was a mom and dad, and they had a couple older kids and two girls in high school. And I was so impressed by how the father in that family very intentionally spent time individually with each of his kids. So he'd take the older daughter grocery shopping, and then he'd get home and he'd walk the dog with the younger daughter. He's always finding ways to spend time individually with them. And so I told him once, I admire you for finding quality time with your kids. And he said, "I don't know what quality time is. There's just time. I just try to spend lots of time with my kids. Whether it's quality or not, I don't know." Time, the gift of time, seems to be the thing that we're most lacking sometimes in our life. We have enough money, we have enough friends, we have food in the refrigerator, but it's time that we're looking for. So the reality is that we have to spend time with the Lord if we're going to know him, because Jesus is a person. And so if we're going to get to know him on a personal level, we have to do what we do with other persons when we're trying to get to know them. How does a young man come to know the girl upon whom he has a crush, whom he will eventually start dating and propose to and eventually marry? Well, it's time. He has to spend a lot of time with her. We actually see this happening a lot in the gospel. Jesus, getting to know his apostles, spends time with them. 3 years Jesus spent with his apostles, and they did everything together. So no wonder after the death and resurrection of Jesus, those apostles were so convicted that Jesus was their best friend and worth dying for, that they went all over the world and all died for him. They didn't die for an idea, they died for a person, because they knew Jesus. They knew him on a deep, intimate, personal level. They knew he was God. They knew that he was everything that he claimed to be in his life: the gate, the bread of life, the light of the world. They knew that it was all true because they knew him. And it changed their life forever. And now they get to spend eternity with their best friend forever in heaven and with each other, who are their close, intimate friends as well. But we also see Jesus doing this not just with the apostles and his disciples, but also with the Father. We always see Jesus stealing away. Clearly, he loved being with the apostles. He spent a ton of time with them, but sometimes he escaped from their company, not because he was sick of them and needed me time, but because he needed time with his Father. And so he would steal off to a little cave on the mountain and spend the night there. He would get up really early in the morning. Before he had to do something important, he would go away from the apostles to spend time with the Father. So this is simply what I want to focus on this evening. And I don't want to get too practical. Next week, I'll talk more practically about prayer, practically what we can do when we go to pray. But this evening, I just want to talk about prayer as time spent with our friend, the Lord. So time is essential, at least 15 minutes a day. Maybe more if we have it. Some people have to get really creative in order to find 15 minutes in their day, especially parents with young people. It might seem impossible some days to do that. But for most people here who don't have little kids, it's not impossible to find 15 minutes a day. Maybe we can even find more than that if we reflect on how we spend our day and how we spend our time. It's not easy to spend time with the Lord. The enemy of our human nature doesn't want us to spend time with Jesus, and so he's going to throw all of the obstacles that he possibly can. He's going to make us think that we don't have time. Or he's going to put an idea in our head right before we went to pray that, oh, I just have to email that person, or I just have to set the timer for this or that, or I have to get the squash roasting in the oven. These are all things that the enemy tempts me before I go to pray. Because the enemy knows that if we start spending time with Jesus, our heart's going to change. And we're going to know him better, and we're going to be a lot more secure in our relationship with him. So while we're trying to make daily prayer a habit, we might find that we're really struggling to do so, and that would be a totally normal thing. You're not a bad person if you struggle to make prayer a daily habit. But a really good thing to do when we're struggling with anything, including finding time to pray, is to ask God to help us to do it. In the gospel, Jesus says, "Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks, the door will be opened." So it could go something like this. You're struggling to pray, you set aside some time, and then a bunch of things come up and you're getting frustrated with yourself. And so then you say in your heart, "Jesus, when do you want me to pray?" And guess what? You just prayed, because you just talked to the Lord in your heart. You did it. So we can ask the Lord for help, and that's already a prayer when we ask Jesus to help us to pray. And because he wants the time with us more than we want the time with him, isn't that unbelievable that Jesus, who doesn't need anything, would actually want time with me? But it's true. He calls us his friends. And so Jesus, who wants time with us more than even more than we want it with him, he's going to come through. He's going to give grace so that we can spend time with him. So what kind of prayer am I talking about? It might be a little bit different than the kind of prayer that we're used to thinking about when we think about prayer. I'm not talking about saying prayers, even though that's a good thing to do. So even though I try to say the rosary every day, this isn't the kind of prayer that I'm talking about. I'm not talking about saying prayers. I'm talking about entering into a relationship. Prayer is a dialogue. It's a conversation. We have a friendship with God, a love relationship with him. And so real prayer is prayer of the heart. It's what blessed now St. John Henry Newman calls cor ad cor loquitur, which means heart speaking to heart. What if you went into prayer knowing that you would speak from the heart and Jesus would receive you in his heart and Jesus would speak back to you from his heart and you would receive him in your heart? Wouldn't that be a wonderful experience of prayer? So it means, first of all, telling God what is on our heart, sharing with him the good, the bad, the ugly. Again, the devil might put thoughts in our head like, the Lord is sick of hearing you complain about your husband. Or, the Lord isn't interested in this, or he's tired of listening to this. That's not true. You have loved ones, and you know that you want your close friend to share with you what's really going on in their life. You want your spouse to tell you if something is troubling them. You want your children to share with you both their joys and their fears and anxieties. And if Jesus tells that wonderful story, a little story in the gospel, it says, which one among you, if your son asks for a fish, would hand him a snake? So the answer is no one would do that. But then Jesus says, if you who are wicked know how to give good things to your children, how much more your Father in heaven? So if we who are wicked want so much our loved one to share with us honestly and openly from the heart, how much more would our good God want that from us? That we share with him honestly and openly from the heart. Sharing joys, struggles, gratitude, sorrows, even telling him if we're angry with him or upset with him. Isn't this what we want our loved ones to do too? Do you want your son or daughter harboring a grievance against you, feeling like you committed an injustice against you? And never telling you about it? Of course not. God is our Father, and he wants to hear what's going on in our heart. He already knows what's going on in our heart, but he wants to hear it from us. Why? Well, for the same reason that you want your spouse, your children, your close friends to tell you what's going on in their heart, because it's a sign of love and trust. When we love and trust someone, then we can be really honest with them. And we can share with them the good, the bad, and the ugly. When you share the good, the bad, and the ugly, including if you're upset or angry with God, he takes that as a compliment. He loves that. He has very thick skin. You're not going to offend him by your honesty with him. So when we go to spend time with the Lord, instead of busying ourselves saying prayers, which is a good thing, but in every relationship that's worth something, we need time, sharing. And so when we go to be with the Lord, it's really important that we share from the heart. But it's also important that we listen too. We all probably have someone in our life who does all of the talking. And they are really good at sharing things, but not so good at listening. So now let's just think about what our prayer life looks like. Are we good at saying words to the Lord? Maybe. We can be really good about telling him all of the needs of our children and grandchildren, everything that we're worried about or praying for. We can be really good about saying words like those beautiful prayers that the church gives us, the Our Father, the Hail Mary, the Glory Be. We can even sometimes be good about sharing with the Lord what's going on in our life. But then what do we do when we're done? Do we go bake a cake? Do we listen? Do we allow him to respond to us? Do we stop talking and just be still? Allow him to speak back to us. And he doesn't speak in words. I mean, he can, but usually he doesn't speak audibly. But he does speak to our heart. A lot of times it's just a sense of peace, the sense that he's with us. And I tell you what, most of the days, that's all I need. I don't need him to say words to me. I just need to know that he's here and that he hears and loves me. But if all we do is talk and then go on our merry or not so merry way, then we lose the opportunity for him to comfort us. So when we go to pray, we want it to be like a real dialogue of a real friendship in which I speak to the Lord from the heart and then I stop speaking and I just sit with him and allow him to speak. Maybe he speaks, maybe he doesn't. Maybe I feel his love in my heart. Maybe I don't. I bet married couples this would describe pretty accurately your marital relationship. Maybe you talk. Maybe you don't. Maybe you feel love. Maybe you don't. But you're together. You're with each other. So sometimes we don't have words to say when we go to the Lord, and sometimes he doesn't have words to say to us, or at least we don't feel like he's saying anything. But isn't it with our very best friends that we can be together and we actually don't have to say anything? Or your spouse with whom you've been married for decades, where you just don't have to talk. Isn't that a comforting reality? God's happy to be with us in the silence, to just be. There's a wonderful story that St. John Vianney told about this little church that he used to visit, and he would stop in, and often he would see this old farmer. And the farmer would sit there for very long periods of time. And so one day John Vianney said to him, "What are you doing here?" Because it just seemed like he was sitting there. John Vianney said that the man looked at him and pointed to the tabernacle, and he said, "I look at him, and he looks at me." That's a pretty beautiful prayer, I think. Friendship. St. Teresa of Avila said, "Contemplative prayer, in my opinion, is nothing else than a close sharing between friends. It means taking time frequently to be alone with him who we know loves us. So I guess I would like to stop talking now so that I can allow you to be with the one who loves you, the one who looks at you as friend, so that you can share with him from your heart, and so that he can share with you from the heart as well. This evening, I'm grateful for to the Jacob sisters who are going to be doing some music on and off with some periods of silence as we spend this time in adoration with Jesus. I will be back in the confessional at this time. I think Father Bob might be back in the left hand. Oh, there he is. Great. He'll be in the left hand confessional. I'll be on the right. At about 7:35, we'll start benediction. God bless you.